Welcome to Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
Hey, I met you. You are not cool.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
You goddamn communist heathen, you had best sound off that you love the Virgin Mary, or I'm gonna stomp your guts out. Now, you do love the Virgin Mary, don't you?
Visit us at IHateCritics.net. We're also at IHateCritics.com, Everyone's a Critic Movie Podcast.com, Facebook. We have a group and their normal page. I almost called it a fan page. I refuse to call it a fan page. I hate the word fan. listener page.
Nobody's really a fan. They just tolerate us. It's right. The Facebook toleration page.
Yeah. Twitter, Instagram, our handle is CriticsPod. All those social media sites, that's where you can watch our watch the trailers, participate in our top fives, interact, read Sean's reviews, and a wide variety of other things. We're also at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, all your podcatchers. No matter where you go, though, please head over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and rate and review. That still seems to be the gold standard of where the podcast rankings are, so, and that does help us out getting noticed. And then Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon, to support the podcast. Movie Pass is on its last leg, so we'll have to figure something out there. But
Josh, you want to tell your Movie Pass story this week?
Sure. I went to see Teen Titans Go to the Movies with my boy and Beth, and when we were there, I got it ready. And it says, go ahead and check in. You're going to owe $5.75. I said, whoa, hold on a second. You want to say peak pricing for 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday? Fine. It's a weekend. Fine. Eat me, but fine. I said, wait a minute. $5.75 is like 75% of the ticket because the ticket's like $8.70-some cents for a matinee. I said, so, oh, wait a minute here. I'm going to have to do the math on this, because if you're paying $9.99 a month, then if you see 4 films a month now, like one a week, as I want to do on this show, then they are making like money off of you, per se. You're not really getting any sort of benefit at all on that. Maybe $2, $3. That's it. And so MoviePass can eat me. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to do something like that to your users, then go down in a ball of flames. I don't care.
Yeah, at some point they're going to have to. There has to be a benefit for the person using it. And, okay, $2, $3 is still a little bit of a benefit. I went that same day, but at 10 in the morning, and they had both the 2 o'clock and the 4 o'clock at peak pricing like the day before.
Yeah, tell me about peak pricing when I saw 7 other people in the theater, right? Too. So, you know, I'm sorry, it's not working out. I wish the best for them, and I wanted them to succeed, mainly because of how this system works. Even if they didn't, in the end, it should have sparked somebody else to have a competing system. Or the theaters, if they're going to have some sort of system where you subscribe each month to their theater, I would have been even okay with that. In this case, it's clearly
Cinemark's kind of doing it. I'd like to see Regal do something a little bit better, since that's closer to me and you as well. You as well. Sorry, I just knocked my microphone over my face. And even the Cinemark one, though, is still, you're kind of just paying what you're already paying. You're just paying in advance. Slightly, there's a little bit of a deal there, but it's still, I don't know.
The deal there with Cinemark is that you get one free movie a month, but the real deal is getting prices off of the concessions, because that's where the money is.
And you also, I believe, it knocks the price down to $8.99.
Right, it takes about a dollar off the ticket.
So there is benefit there. It'd be nice if, even if MoviePass raised their prices, double it. It's still a deal for us. You know, you're going as much as. But you just do something to, you know, Netflix ran into this problem too, and they figured it out and didn't screw it up. So you would think they could have done something here to figure this out, but so far.
But they did crash this past week when people were trying to use it, and that's because they literally ran out of money and needed to borrow money in order to keep it back online. So if you're a user that had your MoviePass app crash this past week, that's the reason why. Oops. It would be like trying to take a money out of your bank, and they're like, oh, crap, we ran out.
It's been an unsustainable model. It remains at this point an unsustainable model for whatever reason. And
well, specifically for that price.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically paying for one movie with that price, and I know we're seeing at minimum four between Josh and I, but probably even more than that. That's probably a bad month. So right away, and they didn't do a good enough job of making the theaters work with them. They just kind of let the theaters bully them a little bit, and it just doesn't work. Trailers this week. Let's start with, is it Alita Battle Angel?
Yeah, and this is a James Cameron produced piece that he's been trying to do for years, about a girl who's part robot, part human, and some kind of ancient technology, whatnot. So she's battling somebody, whatever. I don't know what's going on in this movie, but it looks cool. I'll give him that. As much as I can't stand Cameron, this movie looks pretty cool. The trailer looked pretty cool. And whoever this actress is and her physicality, he looks really cool. And I love Christoph Waltz as that kind of mentor figure. He's a fun, good guy in the few roles that he plays where he's a good guy.
Yeah, this is, I believe, directed by Robert Rodriguez, too, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember hearing about this movie way back when Cameron was talking about doing Avatar, and it was which project would he choose first, and then we got Avatar. And so it's a labor of love for him in a way, but he didn't care enough about it to take Avatar away from him. The trailer itself, the first one looked okay. It intrigued me enough to probably be interested to see it. There's something about the animation style or the CGI in this one, it's a little off-putting. That might distract me when I'm watching the movie a little bit, so I'm going to keep that in the back of my head. As the story goes, I guess it doesn't necessarily matter. because
sounds like Avatar.
Yeah, because this one looks like one of those movies that wants to push the boundaries of technology, not necessarily blow you out of the theater because of how tight the story is.
I think there's more soul to it, though, because of Rodriguez. I think with Cameron, it becomes much more about the science and the CGI and the computer stuff. Whereas with Rodriguez, I think he does care about telling a story. So that gives me kind of faith in it.
They really are polar opposites. Like, Rodriguez is, I'll do it for pocket change. And then Cameron's like, give me $1 billion. So it is a weird combination to put together, but at the very least, I'm curious at that, but I'm with you. I thought it looked, the animation did kind of, it was, I don't know, I just had my, you know, it bothered me a little bit. You know, I think of like Ex Machina, a smaller movie where it looked really, really cool. I mean, I know it's different, but there was just something there that kind of did bug me a little, but who knows when we finally get there what it'll look like.
I can tell you that I don't think it's going to make a lot of money. There's something about it that reeks of, oh, crap. This is going to be in the red big time before it's all said and done.
I wonder how much they spent on it. Because that's the thing. Rodriguez tends to go cheap if he can. But it is a Cameron-produced thing, so I don't know.
I just have a bad feeling about its financial success is all.
I have no insight.
Mid-90s. Jonah Hill.
Written and directed, I believe. This is a rare outing for him. I don't know if he's done this before. Interesting, though. Isn't that the kid from Stranger Things? Or one of the kids from Stranger Things?
Not one of the main ones.
Yeah.
But he could have been in the show. I just didn't recognize his face.
This kid in the mid-90s growing up and just the little adventure that he has in the world of skateboarding in Los Angeles in the mid-90s. And it's got a pretty good slice of what the 90s kind of felt like. And I like Jonah Hill a lot. I think as he's getting older, he's taking more chances. He's got also a new Netflix show that's coming up with Emma Stone that looks really intriguing, and he's been really making some interesting choices away from behind the scenes.
It's a very interesting trailer. I can't say that it put me in the 90s the same way that 80s stuff puts me in the 80s when I watch that. But then again, by the time that this movie is set, I kind of didn't notice the things around me. I was more interested in the lady in front of me and how I could date her or something like that. You know, very tunnel vision in 1995. But the trailer's a heck of a trailer. It's serious in some parts. It's funny in some parts. It looks like just the kind of thing that would exist in the time of Oscar Golden Globe that would really interest us. And if we hadn't watched the trailer, might have come out of nowhere and we saw it on a random Friday night somewhere.
No, I'm with you. The fact that it's A24 and Jonah Hill means I'm on board. But, you know, the 80s, we remember the 80s through pop culture, and that's kind of how we remember it. We lived the 90s. That was like our prime era. You know, that's where we start remembering everything. And I didn't skateboard. I didn't do a lot of the stuff that were in this movie. So I couldn't necessarily relate to what was going on.
Yeah, something about the 90s didn't feel all that distinctive. I mean, I know that they're grunge in the late 90s, early 90s, right, whatever it was. But that sort of faded away very quickly.
Right, because you had Kid Rock right after that. It was like you had literally pulled. But the 80s was technically like that, too. It's just that we didn't, you know, a lot of us, we remember what we remember from because, out of pop culture. But it did start off very punk and then went, I don't know, it's just a...
You have a favorite 90s movie?
That's like about the 90s, I guess.
No, I mean a movie that was made in the 1990s.
Pulp Fiction, Big Lebowski, I don't know.
by definition, Pulp Fiction. Oh, no, Lion King would be mine.
Crap, I shouldn't have said that.
Obviously, Lebowski came out in the 90s, but it doesn't feel like it did. That movie just exists in a time of its own.
Well, that's the thing, is a lot of the, like, who knows when Pulp Fiction came out, too. That, you know, it came out in 94, but who knows, that could have been the 70s movie for all we, you know, both those movies.
And that's my point, is that the 90s, maybe because it's just we don't have the proper perspective on it, but it didn't feel distinctive. The 80s, at least, you know, with the way that MTV sort of defined the culture, it does have a feel. And there's certainly, there was a distinctive look in fashion. And certainly the 90s had maybe, like I said, the grunge look early on, but then as the went on, did it really have anything definitive or distinctive about it?
I'm wondering, how old is Jonah Hill? Is he slightly younger than us or our age?
I'd say he's early 30s. Yeah. So
okay. And that tells me something there. As 16-year-olds in 1995, 18, 19-year-old perhaps, definitely experiencing it differently than the kid in the story will be, too. 12, 13 years old, maybe, this kid. It's a different age and different formative things that are happening to you at a time where culture may have been relevant to him, but not necessarily to us.
Yeah, and I think as we look at the best pictures, I feel like the 80s, other than the select few that like Amadeus and whatnot, tend to be kind of letdowns when we look at the nominations compared to like the 70s and then later on in the 90s. I think even though, I don't know, my two favorite decades are probably the 70s and 90s with films. You know, at least that's what I keep going back to the most. But I don't know. A24 and Jonah Hill has me at least giving it a shot. All right, let's start with Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Teen Titans Go to the Movies is a adaptation of the cartoon series. I think it's on Cartoon Network.
Indeed.
It's a DC property. The Teen Titans are a long-time staple of the DC universe. They're a group of, I don't know, at least one of them is a sidekick. Robin is obviously the leader of this group. And they've been through a number of incarnations, there have been a number of members. I know this only from watching a guy called Linkara, who does a show called Atop the Fourth Wall on YouTube. And Teen Titans were his favorite show, so I know about him from that. He did a whole history on him, which was pretty fascinating. This has nothing to do with that, of course. This is just some kind of wacky cartoon satire of the DC universe, and in that way it's kind of funny. The idea here is that Robin wishes there would be a movie made about him after seeing Batman, the latest Batman movie, and then seeing that everything about Batman is getting its own movie. Which is a funny bit. The car's getting a movie. The belt's getting a movie. Alfred's getting a movie, which may actually happen. Which made that joke that much funnier. This is okay. This is not great. I wasn't blown away by it. It did feel like kind of a bloated TV movie, basically. But for the most part, it was quick. It was funny enough. And it was over.
You should talk first.
I've never seen the TV show. My kids have, and my niece really wanted to see it. So I took three kids to this movie.
And you were in hell.
No, I mean, the kids did make it. I was in hell later on in the week. More so in the theater than this. But I know it was fun. I thought it was clever. You know, I think Lego Batman's far superior, and that kind of beat all the jokes, you know. But this one still is fresh enough to make it watchable and still good. I mean, it's not like you can stop making movies because Lego Batman was so good. It served its purpose, and I enjoyed it. And I thought the poop and fart jokes were really, really funny, and I liked the last line of the movie. Yeah, I mean, some poop jokes really just like, come on, but this one was just like... like almost Andy Kaufman-esque funny because I just kept doing it. And it was the same one. It wasn't like a different one. And it grew on me every time.
As a veteran of this show, I mean, Teen Titans Go, that is. My son really likes that show. And I was reticent to watch it at first because it looked like a lot of sugar bottled up in 11-minute segments. And it is, but it's the kind of sugar that you... continue consuming without necessarily crashing 30 right. minutes later. Now, just don't watch it for 3 hours in a row because then you'll find yourself as a late 30s individual, like, drooling onto the floor. It will happen because you can't keep up that energy level. This movie does, though, and as scared as I was that it wouldn't capture that same energy that the show has for that truncated period of time... it does. The first half is better than the second half of this film, but we're talking about 90 minutes here. That's not too egregious to sit through. And there's just enough references in this film to make adults happy. And certainly fans of the show as kids were happy with it. My son was effervescent about how much he enjoyed it. The characters in this film, the little Easter eggs that they have, all of the characters that are lined up for this Batman movie premiere or whatnot, I'm like, ooh, ooh, ooh. That's literally like the first time these characters have been on a movie screen before. So there's a little piece of like, at least he got on screen, and including some of the most, the least relevant DC characters of all time, Guardians of the Void or the Unknown, or I can't remember what they're called.
I think it's
called.
The Unknown, something yeah. other.
Yeah, that's funny. I don't know who they are, but they're real. So they're taking DC stuff and making it fun, which is a big deal. And on top of that, the jokes in this one, it's good stuff. I laughed out loud a number of times, and I don't know if that's because my maturity level is met by this film or if I'm able to take myself and apply my likes and dislikes to a film easily. You know, I can sink my mind into the mind of my son pretty easily, I think.
And there's part of it that's like, you know, it's okay to not be mature 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, I did appreciate the DC movies have, or the Marvel movies have been, especially like Deadpool and whatnot, you know, they weren't afraid to mention DC movies, and this wasn't afraid to mention Marvel stuff. And
Stan Lee
bits were funny. I don't know. And then even the last line of the movie where they say, hey, kids, ask your parents where babies came from. That's a good fuck you to parents, I think.
I think, honestly, not to overpraise this film, but the DC universe needs this.
Okay.
It needed this so much. Like, it's so serious all the time. The movie universe is so ponderous that this kind of sense of humor would be a nice injection into that universe. Because it's completely lacking that right now. So that on that level, I kind of enjoyed this movie. And my favorite joke in the movie is just Nicolas Cage. That's just the best. Yes. That's the best joke in the movie. Nicolas Cage finally getting to play Superman.
Which I knew that, but I forgot about it. And then when I heard his voice, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is amazing.
Me too. I'm leaning over. I'm telling my son, I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to talk during a movie. Because I badly wanted to tell him right then and there about Superman Lives, and I couldn't. So
I just wish his character had been designed that way.
That would have been awesome.
At least for like a minute. Like, how do you like my new look? So, this was good, but to tell you how I had a very unique experience seeing this because three people showed up in costume. They were cosplaying as Titans characters.
Which ones?
This girl actually had like pink hair and like the full
Starfire.
She had the Starfire outfit, and she was really peppy. She was really happy.
How old was she?
She couldn't have been. She was like 15, maybe.
She was the teen.
Well, I'm just making sure. Hoping.
No,
not that it matters. I mean,
get into character too.
Be you, but.
She was like 15, and her friends were like 15. And yeah. Neither one was dressed as Robin. The other two were dressed as I think one was like Beast Boy, and the other one was the girl in a cloak.
Raven.
Yeah.
And the one that always plays the music, isn't he in the Justice League movie?
Yeah, Cyborg is. But they'll play up or down his age sometimes.
Why did they mention that? That
would have
been a funny
mention. I kept waiting for that reference.
Like, he actually got to be in a movie.
I mean, even Wonder Woman had a good reference of, I finally got my movie. Superman seemed to be annoyed that Batman kept getting movies. And at least that's what it felt like to me. Didn't Nicolas Cage have a line like,
I think he might have, yeah.
Or at least a reference. I don't know if it was a direct line, but you had to kind of pick up on it. Which, totally off topic, the guy who made that documentary off They Live passed away. That sucked.
Really?
Yeah. John something.
I can't think of his last name.
First name. Last name begins with an S. He had a stroke and passed away from his injuries.
Yeah, on Comic-Con weekend. It was kind of, they made a big deal about it.
Well, that's really sad. I like that guy.
Yeah, he made a lot of fun, you know, nerdy, and, you know, celebrating the nerd culture kind of thing. But Teen Titans Go, all the kids I took loved it. I kept telling my niece we were going to see Mission Impossible, and she would cry the whole way there. So I troll everybody, Josh, not just you. But she got me back. She took a sip of my water, and then I saw her. She just, like, licking the... All around the bottle. Like, oh, God damn it. I gotta go get another one.
Yeah, that's why you get two or maybe three straws if you're gonna share drinks with the kids, you know?
Because none of them wanted drinks.
Oh, of course not, but then they'll drink your stuff. And they'll lick the outside of it. They'll provide the backwash with the extra food in it. Oh,
and then they just kind of hold it in their mouth for a while, and it's just like, come on.
Yeah, I don't have kids, so my experience is great.
Well, even if they're not yours, it's like you want to be nice and share things with them because you're promoting sharing, but then, no, you don't.
Yeah, no, not me.
But no, if you're thinking about seeing this movie, your kids will love it, and it's fun enough for adults, too. And, you know, I feel like we did say the DC Universe needed Lego Batman, and then what did they do? Nothing, really. Wonder Woman, that's about it. So hopefully they can do something to
now
use
watch,
this.
They'll make Aquaman really comic, and we'll go, that sucked.
Well, you know that they will. I mean, that Comic-Con trailer had what they thought was humor in it. So.
Let's move on to, I don't know how weird this transition will be or not, but Identical Strangers, is that right? Or
that's
I...
the do- yeah. This is the documentary that came out surprisingly this weekend. Like, came out of nowhere, just arrived in theaters. Three Identical Strangers is a story of three brothers who were separated at birth. They were born triplets, and they were then adopted by three different families. And this story is very strange because it begins as this kind of heartwarming thing where this guy arrives at college one day. And everybody's being nice to him. And he's kind of surprised, like, why is everybody being so nice to me? And everybody's welcoming him back. And he's like, I've just arrived here for the first time. And finally he runs into a guy who explains, you look exactly like this guy who everybody loved who was here last year, named Eddie. And so he takes this guy, Bobby, to meet Eddie. And Eddie is his twin. And he's like, wow, this is amazing. I have a twin brother. How did this happen? And it's this heartwarming story. And they do a story on it in New York Newsday. And it goes viral, you know, kind of goes viral for 1980. And it's all over the place. And then, oh, hey, this other guy sees it in the newspaper. These two guys look exactly like me. Oh, I'm the third brother. I'm their brother, too. And so they become superstars. They're on Donahue. They're on the Today Show. They're on everywhere talking about having just met, and they're all dressed the same, and they've all got the same mannerisms, and it's kind of this fascinating story. But it turns out there's this deep, dark secret behind this that is shocking and kind of horrible, and It basically, what it boils down to is the idea of nature versus nurture. What is it that creates you as a person? What is it? Is it the parents and the way they raise you, or is it the just your innate nature, who you are? Is you don't change based on where you're raised. You just are what you are. And it seems like at first the way these guys are coming up, like they all have the same mannerisms, they got the same hair, they got the same, you know, they act the same, they seem to think the same. Oh well, it must be nature, right? But then the cracks begin to show, and they're together, but then one of them's kind of off to the side a little bit. He's kind of weirder than them, and he's got problems that they don't have. And you start to notice throughout the movie that they're only interviewing two of them, and it slowly sinks into you like, where's the third brother? Why aren't they interviewing him? Because he's not here anymore. And there's a reason he's not here anymore. And as this sort of revelation begins to build, I mean, it's not a revelation because they're not trying to hide it. But it's just something you and the audience are just kind of dawns on you relatively early on. And then the secret comes out about what it is that's led to this, that this was orchestrated, that this was not something that just randomly sort of happened, that a group of scientists got together with this Jewish organization, this adoption agency, and literally decided that on the three families that they chose and placed these kids specifically there, and then would, as condition of the adoption, would show up and interview the kids to see how they're growing up, because they wanted to test nature versus nurture. They intentionally separated numerous twins and triplets across the New York area, so they could do this experiment to find out.
No, that's cool.
It is fascinating, and it's horrifying at the same time. And you must see this.
Were they counting on them running into each other?
No, they didn't plan on them running into each other at all. But they really didn't make any plan at all. They never published the study. They never told anybody they did it. They gave up on the study, and nobody actually knows what they did with their research.
Is there a part of me that's wondering, like, why aren't these people in jail, you know, for life?
You don't do that with white-collar crimes.
Yes, okay, I'm following.
There's some very
much
rich,
as what you should.
Very rich people who were involved in this horrifying thing that they did. And they did, and they the way they talked about it was like, this is just a good bit of science that we're doing. This isn't as monstrous as some Nazi experiment.
Yeah. Like, to them, the oops is like, hey, we're rich. It's oops. they're not people.
You know, as you were explaining this, I said to myself, boy, it would have been really shitty if somebody like made this happen. Well, there you have it. I mean, it's not like something out of science fiction. It's really terrible.
And it wasn't just these three guys. It was a number of twins that they
did
this
with. Did they go into all those, too?
They mentioned another pair of twins who had a similar thing happen. And if you're thinking I did spoilers or something, it's a documentary, first of all, so get over it. But I've also not mentioned like the real fallout and the real result of this, which is kind of how the movie plays out, is kind of telling you, not necessarily coming down one way or the other on nature versus nurture, because really, as much as scientists are desperate to answer that question, the reality is much more simple, and that is both. Right. It's both nature and nurture. You're going to be defined by both of those things.
Yeah. So what happened to the third one?
He committed suicide.
Kind of what I thought. I was worried a little bit that the scientist might have done something, but
well, he did. Oh. In a way. I mean, in a way, just by separating the three kids and putting them through what he put them through. It's fascinating to think. I mean, when they start really getting into how these three reacted without even knowing they were triplets, they were reacting to not being together as if somehow they knew that they were supposed to be. You know, just looking, each of them talked individually about banging their head against a wall as babies, based on basically what they believed was separation anxiety. They didn't realize what they were separated from, but yeah, separation anxiety.
Yeah, I don't know why you always need to answer every question in the earth. Just let some things be. Man.
It's a monstrous thing that they did. A horrible, horrible thing. I mean, it's an effort of science on their part, and it does pose a pretty fascinating question. Like, I've often joked with friends of mine that they should just treat their kids as an experiment, but I didn't actually mean it. This is actually like taking the idea of treating your child as a science experiment and actually doing it.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this on the show. Josh and I are literally doing the opposite of what our parents did, which is obviously what the opposite of each other is. and it's not for an experiment. It's just like, there's things I don't like about myself that I think would have been different if I had been raised differently. And so I'm doing my kids this way, and they're going to do probably the same thing when they get older.
It's this weird sliding scale of do more good here, you know, maybe cut back here.
Right.
Constant adjustment.
Yeah. I know. Speaking of documentaries, have you watched that Robin Williams one yet that's on HBO?
I did.
It's interesting.
It's good. Yeah, it is really interesting. I was surprised how little time they spent on Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
They didn't even show his Oscar speech. I was thinking they would just show him at the Oscars. That was such a big moment in his life, and it's just glossed over.
But they didn't really, I felt like they didn't really stop a whole lot. They kind of spent a little time on Mork and Mindy, but then it just kind of went. But it was just kind of like happiness gradually going into really sadness. It was just like a downhill movie. But, I mean, effective on both ends.
Right,
the happiness was great and the sadness was supposed to be sad. But I don't know. Pretty neat. It's on HBO, I think.
Yeah,
Amazon.
It's on HBO.
And then Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yes, the sixth film in the Mission Impossible franchise. And picking up the story off of Rogue Nation, where Ethan Hunt and his team are tracking down what's left of the syndicate and trying to prevent some nuclear weapons from getting into the hands of the wrong people and being blown up in a plan that is almost eerily similar to Thanos, really, just except this time they're trying to manipulate the markets as opposed to, you know, eliminate a portion of mankind. It's kind of a similar idea, though. And Ethan Hunt's trying to prevent that. Of course, this is all about, a lot of this is about stunts and about big stunt work and about running.
All of it.
But I thought the underlying story wasn't that bad, and I thought it was effective enough as an action movie that it kind of worked for me. I like Christopher McQuarrie as a director because I thought Rogue Nation was a great improvement over what they did with Ghost Protocol, which I watched Ghost Protocol. I watched all of them this week, and I was really surprised by, you know, Ghost Protocol, as big as that Burj Khalifa climb is and this blowing up the Kremlin. That movie kind of sucks, really, because they had to write that movie specifically to the stunts, the big building climb and the Kremlin blowing up. They had that before they had a script. And then Brad Bird comes in and has to direct that to those moments. And that kind of sucked that movie down. And then he improved things with Rogue Nation. He wrote this. He still had action beats to be like the airplane thing. They had to put that in there. But other than that, Tom Cruise hanging off the airplane was the only one he had to write to. And then this one, he got to actually write as a movie, which I thought was a better approach than having to write the action scenes and then make a movie to go with the action scenes. He actually made a real movie. And I thought it worked for the most part. I was entertained by this movie. Henry Cavill didn't irritate me too much. The big airplane scene where they jump out of the airplane at super high level, I thought was really cool. It reminded me of a story from The Dollop, which I always love that. If I can find something from there where a guy gets, they're jumping out of an airplane, getting struck by lightning as they fall through a storm. I thought that was awesome. So that was cool. Rebecca Ferguson remains awesome as she was in Rogue Nation. She's great here. I like this movie. I think this is probably, I have much lower opinion of the Mission Impossible franchise after this week. Much, much lower than I had before. Sitting through them all this week was not as easy as I thought it was going to be, because Ghost Protocol is pretty bad, and number two is pretty bad, and number one is abysmal. But I did come away with Mission Impossible 3, which is an incredible movie, both as an action movie and a spy movie, and just a real movie. J.J. Abrams directed the hell out of that movie. Mission Impossible 3 is the one I'll stand by. This one is probably the second best, just by rising a little bit above the other ones.
I'm glad that makes my opinion matter now. I mean, I've always felt bad, you know, not going to those movies and hating them without having seen them. Then finally, I go and I'm like, this sucks. So I'd seen the first one and I've seen this one, and they're all both. This has a little Atomic Blonde, which is like so much is going on. It's easier to follow than Atomic Blonde, but it's just like, Jesus Christ. You don't got to keep twisting shit around. And the trailer doesn't help either, because it's like, from the trailer, you assume Henry Cavill's a bad guy, and then this plays with that the whole movie, but you're kind of already assuming he's the bad guy. And I don't know. There's this end of the movie, they have 15 minutes to prevent this nuclear bomb from going off. Now, it takes me exactly 15 minutes from the Moline Airport to the 53rd Avenue where the cinema is. Exactly 15 minutes. And I'm thinking of how it sucks, because I'm always like, I can get there in 10, and then I'm just watching the minutes go by. Here, what does he do? He climbs up a rope to get on a helicopter, manages to take over the helicopter, manages to then crash into the other helicopter while learning to fly this helicopter. Then they have a fight between the two helicopters. While all that's going on, another guy is tying Rebecca Ferguson up. And Simon Pegg at different times. And it's just, even cut down in the movie, it's like half an hour. So even cutting everything out. Oh, and Tom Cruise has also climbed quarter of a mountain as well. Let's not forget that part. And then after he climbs up the rope and falls down the rope and has to climb up it again, it was just, and that shouldn't matter, and it doesn't really matter. It's just more of a, if Die Hard had come out this week, I feel like we'd be talking like this, like we did Skyscraper. They're different movies. One's a spy action movie, one's more of a thriller, but they're both equally as silly. It just, we didn't watch a classic action movie this week to go along with it to really make it worse. But my kids were restless for the first hour and a half before the action really, I mean, there was a little action here and there, but that last, what would you say, hour, 45 minutes where it really got action. My son got more into it. My daughter never got into it. And we did do the D-Box seats for the first time ever. Yeah. I just wanted to try them out. And I mean, they shake a lot. It's neat. Sometimes you feel weightless, but they're fairly cheap at 10 in the morning. Maybe that had something to do with it, too. I don't know. But it's just, Sean's right. As an action movie, it's fine. It's, you know, it's for that audience. But I don't know.
There's a, what I found out this week watching them all together is that these aren't great movies. They're more along the lines of the Fast and Furious movies, which I appreciate on both a weird level and an ironic level. Like, I have an ironic appreciation for them as much as I love them. They're bad movies, but I adore them. Mission Impossible, I think, are slightly better quality than the Fast and Furious movie, but the same.
Makes me feel good too.
the same sort of low level ambition, though, and it's somewhere like the sweet spot for this one, for the Mission Impossible movies, is somewhere between Fast and Furious and the Bourne movies, which the Bourne movies are real serious action movies, and then you got to have a bit of mixture of the goofy of the Fast and Furious and the seriousness of the Bourne movies. Mission Impossible 3 is the only one that really got it right, and then this one's kind of close to that.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely right in that there was both there. There's times where you got the goofy going on while the series is going on at the same time, and just like, Alec Baldwin and Tom Cruise are in a different movie than Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg are in the same scene. And then Henry Cavill's just Henry Cavill while it's all going on. But, I mean, I guess, and I don't know, if I'm clearly bringing hate to this movie. But when I see Rampage and it's so silly, I can appreciate something like that. I don't know, I feel like really with just about any action movie, we could say, it works as an action movie, there's an audience for it. And so, I don't know.
This has 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I read a 4-star review on Ebert.com.
People get beaten down.
Yeah, it's stating that it's one of the best films of the year, let alone one of the best action films.
Yeah, no.
I don't always trust what this gentleman says, but these films to me are on par with Bourne Identity, and there's a reason why for that. The Mission Impossible stakes always seem to be a little bit higher. It's more of a global story. Bourne Identity is talking about like a group of spies and their internal strife and internal struggle. It seems to be mostly like a stateside type of thing. And so it's more of a character study, and therefore I'm cool with it. Like it's, you get more of a character with Bourne. You get more of like big set pieces, better directors, kind of, sort of, when you're talking about the Mission Impossible series. I mean, Paul Greengrass is a fine director, Doug Liman. But because I'm not real crazy about Doug Liman, but then Abrams and McQuarrie, and I like Brad Bird too. I thought that his film's fine. I really should have done what you did this week. I really wanted to. In fact, I have all of them except for, you know, this one. And I didn't make it to the theater. It's like the first time that I can remember that a film that, yeah, I'm totally seeing that as soon as it comes out, didn't get to. Like, that's a new thing, and I hope that doesn't happen too often.
2.5 hours, or 2:20.
2:20. Well,
so was Born on the 4th of July. I stayed until 3 in the morning watch that one. So
at least that is a, I mean, we can talk about that when we get there, but I don't know.
Sometimes I'd have traded that in a heartbeat. Not that it's a bad movie, but I like to be entertained every once in a while.
I was not entertained until three quarters of the way through this movie. And even then, it was just kind of like, ugh.
I got the impression from the trailer and from reading that review and from that critic score of 98% that this is the thing that will make this series like, hey, this is really relevant. You should pay attention to these. These are movies. They aren't just action films.
No, they're just action films.
And that's slightly disappointing.
That's what they're reviewing it on, too, I think. So if you're going to... And I don't know. They're definitely just action movies.
Although number three does, I think, elevate above. If you get to see one of these, see number three.
And will it work outside of the theater? That's the other thing. You know? I mean, I don't know. I may have seen... That's the one where he falls and, like, hover, right?
That's the first one when he hovers inside of the Pentagon and he's stealing the discs and whatnot. The second one's the John Woo film where he's got long hair.
The Metallica song. Yeah. No, that... I'm not talking about the first one.
Three's got Kerry Russell and this is the one where he meets Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's the villain.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's a badass. That's so cool. He is the best villain. He makes all the other villains in these movies look terrible. Like, who the hell is this guy is the villain in this movie?
John Harris.
Who the fuck is that guy? Who is he?
He's from Prometheus, so I know him, but, you know.
Who the hell is that guy? Why is he even remotely big enough to be the villain opposite Tom Cruise? Like, he's completely overshadowed. But like Philip Seymour Hoffman's like standing right in there with him. Like he's right nose to nose with Cruise and just acting the hell out of that movie. I love it.
I'm with
Kerry Russell,
on that one.
right before Americans, just showing why she's totally like a kick-ass actress. Man, she's awesome in that movie. I love Mission Impossible 3.
Episode 9. Sorry,
and even Henry Cavill, I didn't think. And like I'm spending most of the time in this movie kind of going, you know, he wasn't bad as Superman because he's supposed to be an alien. So his lack of charisma kind of works for those two movies. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching him here and it's kind of a similar thing. Not an alien, but he's definitely not.
You haven't seen Cold Light of Day, so you don't know. You don't know how bad he can be.
Okay, he can be bad, but in these three movies, he's not. He's kind of serving his purpose, I guess. And
he wasn't terrible in this, so I got to give him that.
He won't give him that he served his purpose.
Does his character need the mustache?
No.
Okay, so this whole nonsense of making Justice League hard to watch was completely
unnecessary. Especially when I burn his face off like halfway through.
Face off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You're never going to get me to... I don't know. I get what you're saying with the Bourne. Because the stakes are so high, so much has to go right and be perfect for that to work. And it just kind of lowers the movie-going stakes, I guess, if you will. I don't really know the words I want to use, but I just kind of feel like more I'm watching a cartoon as opposed to the Bourne movie.
Okay, sure. Opinion coming soon. Hopefully I'll get a chance to see it this week. But I remember having, you and I had the discussion when Rogue Nation came out that boy, this is just a hell of a lot of fun. And, you know, these make you want to go to the theater because that's the kind of thing that you should see in the theater. And therefore, I know what I'm getting into when I go to see a Mission Impossible movie, even if it's faux steaks. Like,
right.
It's screen steaks, but still
I
makes
eat faux
me
steaks now.
It's a tofu movie.
Oh, does that mean everything I'm doing is a lie?
That is for you to decide, sir. You and your doctor.
My doctor's not involved. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, it's in theaters. If you want to go see it, I'm sure it'll be number one for a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be the highest grossing Mission Impossible movie this far. Close to $60 million this weekend.
And, yeah. And I will, you know, like I said, if we had seen Die Hard, I think people would be reacting harder to it. But I do think having come off of, what was that movie we watched last week? The Sorry One. Sorry to Bother You. Seen a movie like that in the theater that we don't get a lot of movies like that, even with the tiny problems I had with it. I'm missing those things. And I'm really starting to want that more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah. It sounds like we should open up a theater. Come on, Patreon.
Patreon, yeah. All right, so...
What's your top five? Who's your top five?
Let's do our top five here, because we're not going to lay off Tom Cruise anytime soon, but why not just get it going? Uncle Jeff did share this, so I will go find... I think he had... two commenters. Lisa England, she said, I like Top Gun and Rescue Business. I watched those before I realized what a massive jackwagon he was. I did not mean to read that part. I also enjoyed Rain Man, and she enjoyed Rock of Ages. Lisa Eskelson likes A Few Good Men, Top Gun, Rain Man, The Last Samurai, and Legend. On our Facebook page, we got Cousin Jeff has number 5, Magnolia, number 4, Tom, 3, Cruise, 2, Is, 1, Repellent. Christina Cato has Night and Day, number 5, Legend, number 4, Edge of Tomorrow, number 3, Tropic Thunder, number 2, number 1, Oblivion. Ian Britt has 5, Cocktail, 4, Jerry Maguire, 3, Collateral, 2, Rain Man, 1, Interview with the Vampire, with honorable mention, Top Gun and Last Samurai. Shannon Nelson, 5, Jerry Maguire, 4, Top Gun, 3, Edge of Tomorrow, 2, Rain Man, 1, Collateral. Man, I'm having a hard time talking. Tracy from New Mexico, number 5, Far and Away, 4, Taps, 3, The Outsiders, 2, Jerry Maguire, 1, Rain Man. Uncle Jeff, number 5, Eyes Wide Shut, 4, Jerry Maguire, 3, Magnolia, 2, Magnolia, 1, Magnolia. Steve Douglas, top 5 movies in which Tom Cruise appears. Having not seen Jerry Maguire, Rain Man, Interview the Vampire, Magnolia, The Outsiders, and Eyes Wide Shut. Let's see. Todd Reamer. The best one recently is the one set in a future war. He keeps coming back to life to finally win the war. Edge of Tomorrow, that might have changed the name for the rental.
Yeah, it used to be called All You Need Is Kill. That's the name of the source material.
Jason from New Mexico at number 5, Mission Impossible, 4, The Color of Money, 3, Jerry Maguire, 2, Risky Business, 1, Edge of Tomorrow. Honorable mentions, Night and Day for Cameron Diaz's shoulder, and Rain Man for hurting necks. So podcast references, I appreciate that, Jason. For me, I will, if we're just talking performances, I'll take Magnolia. As much as I hate that movie, he is phenomenal in that. I won't deny that at all, but since it's not a movie I like at all, number 5, I put Rain Man, but maybe All the Right Moves or Risky Business. I don't know. I feel like I have to have Rain Man there. 4, Collateral, 3, A Few Good Men, 2, Tropic Thunder, 1, Jerry Maguire. Josh?
Yeah, I realized after I did my list that, you know, there's others that I missed. I forgot about Vanilla Sky. It should have been at least on the honorable mentions. But number 5 is Jack Reacher. That one kind of surprised me how much he could play the tough guy, like, and I really believed him as the tough guy. Another Christopher McQuarrie movie, actually. For Collateral, I still think it's one of the most interesting performances that he's had as a hell-bent bad guy. Three, Magnolia. I love that movie, and I think he's the best part of it. Two, Minority Report. It's I get that it should be considered like standard science fiction or whatnot, but I love how that movie we experience things around him through his eyes and in the time that he has to get things done and the fact that he's lost something and the surprise that he feels towards the end, the betrayal in that one. I love how he took such a typical role or what should be a typical role and made it deeper than that. And one, I thought about this a lot and I realized, yeah, you know what? Whenever I think of Tom Cruise, I'm always going back to Jerry Maguire. So I talked on the show about how last week about how Minority Report would have been my favorite, but no, it's Jerry Maguire. All the things, the quotes aside, he's just up and down and all over the place in that movie, giving us the best of what we know of him. And I'm also coming from the standpoint of a guy that also hates some of the things that he's said and done over the years, you know, but still really appreciates him as an actor. You know, whenever I'm feeling a little down, I always remember him telling everyone to go take their vitamins and go run for a while, and I want to punch him in the face. But he's still really great at this, and I'll always watch what he does.
For me, number five is Minority Report. Number four is Collateral. Then Magnolia, number three. I love that whole movie, especially his performance. Number two is Eyes Wide Shut. I think he's incredible in that movie. The way he gives himself over to Kubrick's vision, I thought, is really the best acting I think he's done, aside even better maybe than Magnolia. And then number one is Jerry Maguire. That movie just hits all the right notes for me emotionally. It speaks to me in a way that that few movies do, and I appreciate that.
And I do
plays
feel
all
like
the right moves.
Sorry, I do feel like I need to rewatch Eyes Wide Shut, especially after having revisited many Kubrick movies after the fact. That one was early on in my Kubrick viewing days, and I didn't dislike it. I was young, and it was in the theater late at night. Minority Report. I know there's a joke there.
It's good to know that I'm not the only one thinking.
As it was going out of my mouth, I was like, God damn it. I almost had crowded theater.
But, as dick jokes go, it's a good one.
And then Minority Report, I watched that way back when, but I don't really... I know people like that one a lot, and I feel like I need to revisit that one as well.
Shout out to Dave, one of our movie stars. His favorite movie of all time is a Few Good Men, which is certainly an extraordinarily watchable movie. It's very easy to sit down and watch that movie, like on TV. That one really is easy to watch. Obviously, I mentioned Mission Impossible 3. I think is awesome. Vanilla Sky, love Vanilla Sky. Valkyrie is actually not a bad movie, and then of course his. By far, his best comic performance was Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And notice I didn't say I could kick his ass at all while watching. Not saying I can't. I'm just not going to really even go there because he is short, but he's pretty good shape. Alec Baldwin, though, kicks Henry Cavill's ass until Henry Cavill gets a weapon, and that bugged me. I mean, it was brief, and it was a cheap shot, but still, it's Henry Cavill who is... built like a fucking pro wrestler, and Alec Baldwin, who's what, mid 60s, late 60s, or early 60s? I don't know.
And doughy.
He's got that street toughness. I don't know. What the?
Yeah, that was that. Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
I watched a Mission Impossible Fallout trailer this week where everyone had Henry Cavill's mustache attached to their face. It made that because I've seen the Fallout trailer more than any other trailer in my life, at least 30 times. Okay, and so I feel like I've seen the movie, and I'm so glad that this is going to get out of the theater at least, so I don't have to see the trailer anymore. Thank God! But that was a way better trailer than the theatrical one. Add mustaches to everyone.
It was weird to not see the trailer before this movie.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
Our undisputed classic this week is Born on the 4th of July.
Yes, it's all part of Tom Cruise week because we've got another Tom Cruise movie to talk about later.
And we picked his best.
Born on the 4th of July is directed by Oliver Stone. It's part of his trilogy of Vietnam movies that includes Platoon and the one that nobody's heard of, Heaven and Earth, which is very underseen and for a reason. This is a story of a real guy named Ron Kovic who went to Vietnam, was very hardcore about going to Vietnam, got injured badly, left in a wheelchair, and obviously eventually became against the war. His experience is fascinating, and he's a fascinating guy. The movie is a tad obtuse. You can sense Tom Cruise trying really, really hard. Like, he is acting the hell out of this, but it's so obvious. Like, he doesn't seem to believe what he's doing. Like, everything about the performance is very false to me. This reminded me a lot of recent Denzel performances where you can especially Fences, where he's just trying to belt everything to the back of the room. You can see all the acting going on, like the real performative stuff, and that's really going on with Cruise. He melts into the performance eventually, like late in the movie when he's opposite Willem Dafoe. He gets actually kind of real, and it becomes kind of a real, that becomes like a real raw performance for a little while. But for the most part, I felt false to me. It felt like a guy who was really like trying to act this movie really hard, but not really feeling any of what's happening. And there's a lot of stuff to feel here. There's right. A lot of deep emotions that are going on. Ron Kovic had a lot of problems. He was like, this is a really depressing thing that happened to him, and he was really bummed about it, obviously. And it hit him very hard emotionally. And to see Cruise just kind of forcing that as opposed to acting it and feeling it out, it took me out of the movie a lot.
Can I say that I don't blame Cruise, I blame Oliver Stone?
Sure, I would say that.
Do think
it's also part of the way he frames it. Yeah, because it's a very false way of framing it.
I felt like he was making Tom Cruise look kind of bad at times. And, you know, you put him with P.T. Anderson or, you know, Cameron Crowe, even whatever, in this movie, someone who knows what they're doing, you know, he wins an Oscar. But it just, like, you could totally see the acting, and it was just bad directing.
And part of that is, it comes from what he's trying to do. Like, early on, he's trying to force home just how all American Ron Kovic was, and to the point where he's like using the cinematography to try and take you to that time, and it becomes very false as opposed to really feeling the movie. It feels like everything is being forced at you. In terms of just how all American, you expect him to walk down the street carrying an apple pie,
mm-hmm.
and it comes off as very false.
Well, it's like damn cocaine.
This is the second time I've seen this week, and I remember now this week what I didn't connect with the first time, which is that feeling of falsivity. It starts that way, and about 45 minutes in, when you've really got some hard, heavy things happening, all of a sudden, I understand the situation, and of course I have sympathy for him as another human being, and I feel very strongly about this time in American history and how we treated veterans, and that's all very important stuff that a better film is going to tell better.
Coming
and
Home? Sorry.
I'm sure I haven't seen it, but I mean, no doubt, right? It can't be any more blatant than this one, and that seems to be the consensus of this film. There were those that, when they praised it, they praised Cruise's bravura performance. I mean, admittedly, he makes himself look like a teenager again a year after he played a mid-20s bar guy in Cocktail, right? So right. It's a hard thing to pull off that he manages to do in body and in style. Okay, so it's a good performance, but there is something lacking. I should be bawling towards the end of this film, feeling bad for this guy and feeling strongly for the veterans of this country, even more so as a result of the drama that I've just watched. And unfortunately, Oliver Stone's direction, he won Best Director for this movie this year, which I really don't understand. Compared to others, that'd be another subject, but it just doesn't resonate like it should, and that's really unfortunate because this is maybe the voice that people hear when they talk about cinema saying that story.
I think I know what it is that appealed to people at the time. This is a throwback movie to the to the time when people really honored the idea of show your work cinema. Like, it goes back to the day of like Kirk Douglas, where Kirk Douglas was a very obvious performer. I am here to act in this movie. Enjoy my performance. And that's kind of what Cruise is doing at times in this movie, is acting like really heavily. And what this is, and the way Stone directs it, is kind of like a movie from the early or late 50s, early 60s, is kind of how he's directing it. And it's kind of this show your work thing, where you can see all of this very cinematic touches that he's using, and all the stuff he's forcing upon his actors to do. And I think that's what kind of connected with older critics at the time, was them seeing what they used to see, and not the more naturalistic stuff that we would see, or we were starting to get at the time.
And it doesn't hurt that Platoon had just come out, and Oliver Stone's hot, Tom Cruise is hot. So you have two things that you want to like, so that doesn't hurt either.
Boy, that's a good point, because Platoon is such a better film than this,
yeah,
and says the story of Vietnam fine, and we don't really necessarily need to know everything about this film. But it had been a film that had been in the works for some time, over a decade, that Oliver Stone had been trying to make it. Al Pacino at one point was attached to play Ron Kovic, and that would have been a different film, no doubt.
It would have been a lot the same. It would have been louder.
I can see. Well, which Al Pacino are we getting? Are we getting 70s Al Pacino, or are we getting 90s Al Pacino?
Well,
probably Serpico Al Pacino.
Yeah, yeah. At the time that it would have been made.
But I don't think this movie is a terrible movie. I don't think it's a very good movie. I don't think it's terrible. Like I said, towards the end, when him and Willem Dafoe are together, those are some raw scenes, and I was feeling that. I was feeling the dynamic between those two. It was frightening. Dafoe's energy is scary, and the way he's giving energy to Cruise, and Cruise is giving it back to him, that felt like, I wish that were the movie. And it's not. It's just like 10, 15 minutes of the movie.
Right, and well, that goes back to the cocaine, because, and, you know, Cruise had the energy that Oliver Stone clearly had it the whole time, and then the early parts, there's nothing to bounce off of, so you needed that Willem Dafoe thing to even it all out, I think. I don't know, it just, I guess I won't call it terrible either, but in the sense that it should be way better, you know, that I tend to get harder on those movies than I do Deuce Bigelow or whatever, so I'm definitely disappointed in it, because it should be a movie that I wasn't dreading to watch, and then while I'm watching it, just kind of like, ugh.
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said about the choice of composer, too. I am a huge fan of John Williams, obviously, but his style of composition does not fit this subject very well, because you've got some sweeping measures here that don't fit with the story of America not accepting their veterans, and a guy that's personally going through a lot of travail. I can't imagine see this movie with Willem Dafoe and Tom Cruise doing drugs and sleeping with everyone, and John Williams is doing the score. It just, there's something off about that.
Well, it underlines the falseness too of the whole thing. It makes it feel that much more false, because this is not a sweeping movie. This should be. I mean, it's Oliver Stone. Again, this is another case for me of Oliver Stone promising one thing and delivering another thing, which is kind of what he's done for me throughout his entire career, is promises something and then doesn't deliver it.
Yeah, and I feel like as we go back and watch movies, yeah, there are some I do like, but as you revisit them, you do start to see why he's not that great. I mean, Scarface is a perfect example, a movie everybody loves, and I think they're loving it for the wrong reasons anymore, but that was a movie I liked and then gradually started liking less and less and less, and it kind of goes with this. Not so much Platoon, but Wall Street, and, you know, other movies that just aren't quite. I mean, even JFK, as much as I do still enjoy it, I didn't like it as much as I thought I did, and it just seems to be the story of Oliver Stone.
Yeah. Narrowed down, it's Platoon and Wall Street for me. I still really like Wall Street, and then what? I mean, JFK is really long and has some of that same falsivity,
right,
from this wrapped into that, where he's trying too hard to make it look like it's set in the 60s, where it doesn't seem very natural. That's a director's thing right there.
Right, and like I'm afraid to do Born or Natural Born Killers because I know I know that's one that's similar to Scarface. And
I got bad news for you.
Oh, no, I know. But none of you want to watch it, so I'm not too worried about it.
We've got what, 8 years before we have to get to.
No, it's 1992, 93.
Oh wow, so it's only a couple years.
Maybe 94.
Number 18 in 1988. Squeezed and pulled and hurt my neck in 1988.
Squeezed and pulled and hurt your neck in
1988.
Let's stick with Tom Cruise, shall we? Might as well. Cocktail turns 30 this week, and what it reminds me of is the trade of my Mark Grace card. I love the music of this movie at the time. Obviously, Kogmo was a huge hit. There's other songs on it, including Bobby McFerrin's Don't Be Happy. Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Don't Be Happy.
Don't Be Happy.
Okay, that was just my soundtrack.
You just defined my experience of this movie.
Yeah.
Don't Be Happy.
I remember begging and pleading with my parents to let me get that, and I didn't make a lot of money off of allowance, and we're talking $10, $11 here for the soundtrack. And so what I did was bartered with my mom. I said, I have Mark Grace's rookie card. I will trade that to you for the rights to buy Cocktail and future allowances. And it took the entire trip throughout Target to make this trade. But the art of the deal, as it were, went down well, and I did acquire the Cocktail soundtrack. That's the only thing worth it in this movie, because I hate this piece of garbage. I hate almost everything about it, except for...
the waterfall scene.
Even that?
Oh, like, come on. Give me that.
I can't, because I'm a big fan of Elizabeth Shue, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take Leaving Las Vegas. There's your waterfall scene.
Because she just turned with around, champagne. But... That's too real.
Right?
Okay.
You cannot get excited watching that movie.
Just before we move on, I realized that I must have only watched like 15 minutes of this movie because I did not. I know I had seen it, but as I'm watching, I'm like, I don't remember any of this. I just remember that section where he's with Elizabeth Shue before he cheats on her.
Right.
That's all I remember from the movie going into this. And I liked that part. But everything else is just, and I like that part for no real good reason. It's just watchable.
It's nonsense. This is like a soap opera played out as a major motion picture starring the hot star of the day. And I mean, boy, he sure looks good on the poster. And boy, Elizabeth Shue sure looks good. And her name's Jordan. Even something about that creates this like false narrative that you're watching a real movie. It's a piece of garbage. And I mean, I was excited to see it as an adult with all of this thought of what it could be. Because as a kid, I wasn't allowed to watch it for obvious reasons. There's so much bullshit going here. You hate everybody. Okay, so there's no redeeming character, really. And even if you like Tom Cruise's character in this movie, he still does shitty things to people, too. So it's a complete waste of my time.
Yeah, at one point, he cheats on Elizabeth Shue, and then he throws back at her, well, you didn't tell me your dad was rich, so we're even.
Way to go, Roger Donaldson. You made a hell of a film.
I mean, he does realize he's wrong there, but that was part of this movie.
I am a big fan of Tom Cruise. I still am, even. But this week of watching so much Tom Cruise, where I watched all the Mission Impossible movies and Cocktail and Born on the 4th of July, I'm like, oh man, I need it. I don't know if I love Tom anymore. I don't know. Like, I'll watch Jerry Maguire and I'll get it back, but. This came at the end for me watching this one, and it was like, fuck this movie. I was in a bad mood from the first moment, and I stayed in a bad mood the entire movie because it's not good. He's not good. The movie is so it's just so slick and shallow and stupid, and the characters are shallow and stupid, and I didn't care.
And I guess that's my point. That middle part, it's okay that it's stupid and shallow when it's supposed to have more depth and it's still stupid and shallow. That, I mean, it really did bother me. I was like, God, I thought I liked this movie. What the hell is happening here?
It's like watching something on Lifetime with bigger stars.
Right. So. Oh, she's pregnant. Oh, my friend killed himself. Oh, she has twins. Oh, her dad. I mean, it was just...
I thought I remembered this as being cheesy fun, and then you're watching it goes suicide and unplanned pregnancy and all this, like, horrible stuff that keeps happening. It's like, this isn't fun.
It's like one of those. There are a few movies out there that you recognize the soundtrack way more than the film. Purple Rain would be one. Cocktail, another one. City of Angels comes to mind as a garbage film, but a pretty successful soundtrack. This is definitely one of those. I wore the tape out. I don't even have it anymore. And it, nostalgic value is there for me as the first tape that I ever owned myself.
I got the vinyl.
Goodwill.
But yeah, it was, yeah, it really did kind of ruin, I don't want to call it childhood, it was clearly teenager. My friend was a big Tom Cruise fan, and he was, I just remember the bottle twirling and thinking it was cool, and all those cheesy, shallow, fun things that this movie is not.
Flaring. Once you start trying to flare, as an amateur bartender sometimes, trying to do that, just do it in an area where you've got carpet, okay? Yeah, don't
use your
break
cheap,
all the glasses.
Use your well bottles.
Or go with the plastic ones. You're there in college, drink cheap shit anyway. So.
I'm having such a rough, like, with the Tom Cruise thing, I'm having such a rough time. He's like, I don't hate Top Gun, but I don't love Top Gun either. And then I've got to follow up there with Rain Man and then this and Born on the 4th of July. Like, this is a rough time to be a Tom Cruise fan.
Especially an apologist. Right? A lot of people that hate him even more. Doing the top five was hard for me, too, because it was just like, obviously it's Jerry Maguire. I do need to revisit Eyes Wide Shut in my Minority Report. But after that, I mean, Few Good Men's too watchable. Rain Man, I like it, but the further I get away from that one, there's still... It was one of my favorite movies of all time at one point. You know, it's...
You spend too much time with him, his mannerisms become a little bit more obvious.
And he's kind of two-dimensional, you know? You got the prick and the charismatic guy.
Like, one of the things we notice immediately in the Mission Impossible movies is that how flat he can be. He can be really flat when he's in action mode. And there are moments when he'll come out of it, and you're like, oh, that's the Tom Cruise, right? There's the smile. Then it's like he's back into that monotone guy, and it's like, Ethan Hunt isn't that great a character.
I wish he would do more stuff like Collateral, where it's challenging. You don't root for him. There's darkness involved. He's got like a wardrobe change. He's not, because the dude's like 55, something like that, and he still looks like he could pass for 45, right? He's got some kind of magic Hollywood elixir going on.
Scientology.
Xena will cleanse you. Yes.
Well, I will say though, when they had him next to that kid from American Pie, and I think they're kind of both supposed to be playing the same age, you could kind of tell there was a, was it Wes Bentley? Is that his name?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You could kind of tell that Tom Cruise was a little older, but still, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. He's just not a likable guy.
But I when he's committed to it, and he's acting. And not just in a vehicle for us to enjoy as a blockbuster and make a bunch of money. And when I understand he's a producer too, but when he's really acting, that's when I think he shows how super talented he is. Jerry Maguire, Collateral, Rain Man, etc.
People have a hard time when I bring up how well a director directs an actor and how much of a difference it makes. But I think he's another one who proves what a great director can do with an actor who's willing to work with him. And I think that shows with Magnolia. It shows with even Minority Report, where Spielberg brings out something in him. You can see it in Collateral. Even though I don't think Michael Mann is a very good director, he directed the hell out of that movie. And he's a guy. Kubrick, obviously, is the best example of a guy who brings something out of him. The right director, a good director, can take any actor, can take not just any actor, but like an actor who's got something and really bring more to it than what they're bringing. And I think once you get to be as big a star as him, like I said, with Ghost Protocol, what he did with Ghost Protocol was that, I've got these two big stunts I want to do, write a movie to that. And this is the biggest problem with the Mission Impossible movies, are those moments where he's decided, I'm going to do motorcycle stunts in this, so John Woo, try and figure out how to work in motorcycle stunts. I mean, that's when you get to be such a big enough actor that when you're doing that, you're kind of losing touch with it.
What else we got this week, 30 years old?
Two tiny ones. One of them called Monkey Shines. It's a Stephen King adaptation.
I watched it.
Did you really?
It's so terrible. It's
okay.
So bad.
The lead actor's name I didn't recognize, but I saw his face, and I'm like, I know this guy. I could not have sat through a whole movie watching that guy. So please
In
tell
fairness,
us.
I had my back kind of to it doing work. But it was on because it's free on Hulu. Yeah, it's not good at all.
Oh, it's so bad. You got to listen to the How Did This Get Made episode on this movie.
Oh, really?
It's so funny.
This is directed by George Romero.
That doesn't mean it was the 80s, you know, that things happened.
There's a story there, of course, because he was the independent director who's doing something out of nothing, you know, with his zombie films, who decided to do a studio film. And this is his first studio film, and it only grossed like $3-some million or $5 million at the box office and had a budget of $7 million. So,
well, I remember the cover of with the that little toy monkey that's not in this movie. But I had that toy monkey, and it scared the crap out of my friends at 2 in the morning.
So bad, but it is funny bad.
I guess if I paid enough attention to laugh at it, it would have been better. But I kind of took it at face value, and yeah, don't watch it. And then what, Pippi Longstocking?
Yeah, the New Adventures of Pippi Longstocking, you can skip it.
Yeah.
I did see it as a kid, but have no memory of what it's about.
I don't think our demographic gives a shit about that one.
Nope.
So that means, what do we got next week? I didn't close all that, did I?
Christopher Robin.
And, oh, that's right. Christopher Robin, a lot of shit.
Meg?
Oh, yeah. No, that's the week after. Spy Who Dumped Me, which I've seen.
The Darkest Minds. Eighth Grade might come out. A24 movie.
That's the rumor.
So there's a lot going on. Our classic's going to be The Blob, because I do believe The Blob turns 30 as well.
Remake of The Blob turns 30.
So we're doing the original one. And because of The Spy Who Dumped Me, our top five is female duos. So hopefully there's enough of those to exist. I know it's starting to come out more, but maybe it was happening beforehand.
Would a trio work in this case?
Gotta cut one of them out, but yeah. Yeah. That's fine. We can groups of women that you like. I don't know. But yeah, so that is our show. I do want to thank our Patreon supporters. Up here are Key Grip Levels, Jason Bryant and Charlie Messing. Our character actors, Cousin Jeff, Christina Cato, and Josh Paul.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects level, Sarah Ward and Corey from Ivy Envy.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer is Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars are Uncle Jeff and Dave Sievers.
The truth! You can't handle the truth!
But if you want to be a Patreon supporter, ihatecritics.net/Patreon. It's the best way to help grow the show, especially with MoviePass doing what it's doing. So we'll have to figure that out. And other things we're working on. Go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review the show, and help us move up the iTunes charts. Alright, we'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three best friends that anyone...
All right, do you guys want to play Flick Chart?
Yes.
Do we want to play anything in particular, or just go?
Let's just go. I don't think we have anything to play with, really.
You can't really play with Tom.
Yeah, you can't just top Tom Cruise in there, yeah. Godzilla 2014 or The Abyss?
Ugh. Godzilla, I guess.
My memory of The Abyss, it's been probably 20 years since I've watched it, is stronger than my opinion recently of Godzilla.
See, that's the thing. Is I almost wish you could do the... Maybe we'll have to redo The Abyss when it comes out.
It turns 30 next year. Yeah.
I do remember liking it okay, but I really was kind of happy with the new Godzilla movie. So I'm going to take that, but... just remember next year that we're going to redo The Abyss and run it through the flick chart. Talladega Nights or Burlesque? The Cher movie.
Talladega Nights.
I haven't seen Burlesque, but...
Neither, but I'm just going to go with him. Thor, The Dark World, or Any Which Way You Can?
Thor.
Thor, The Dark World.
I suppose. Blood Diamond or The Green Mile?
Green Mile.
I will go Blood Diamond, but barely. Very similar feelings coming out of both movies.
I will go Blood Diamond because I think it's shorter.
It is shorter.
Ghostbusters 2 or Coraline?
Coraline.
Coraline.
I haven't seen it, so I'll just go with you guys. Blood Diamond or Up?
Up.
Up.
Up. Scream or 28 Weeks Later?
Scream.
Scream.
I agree. Animal House or The Sixth Sense?
Sixth Sense.
Sixth Sense.
Yep. Scott Pilgrim versus the World or Walk the Line?
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim.
I agree. I don't like Walk the Line as much as most do. I don't dislike it, but Ray was so much better. American Ultra or Adaptation?
Adaptation.
Yeah, I didn't watch American Ultra. That's the either. Kristen Stewart, Jesse Eisenberg. Yeah,
it'll be hard.
It's a good movie.
Right, but Adaptation is phenomenal.
Yeah, Adaptation's pretty spectacular.
Too Fast, Too Furious, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
It's Temple of Doom, because Too Fast, Too Furious is the weakest of the group.
Temple of Doom, even though I haven't seen Too Fast, Too Furious. I can't get over the title. Like, just spell one of them out for me. Ugh.
Mary Poppins or As Good As It Gets?
As Good As It Gets.
Agreed.
As Good As It Gets finally gets a victory. It's been a while. Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas or Land Before Time? The 2000 version of Jim Carrey.
Dr. Seuss, I guess.
I'm going with the Land Before Time. My memories of the character Ducky in the original Land Before Time and the Pizza Hut toys are the Jim Carrey thing is just obnoxious and hard to
Land Before
watch.
Time has a lot of like personal, like my sister loved it and I fucking hated it. Anytime she had to watch it, I was just tortured.
You were a little older than
Yeah. It fell right into our wheelhouse.
Eyes Wide Shut or LA Confidential?
Ooh, that is tough. That is so hard. Eyes Wide Shut.
I'm going with LA Confidential, but it is a squeaker.
I'm going LA Confidential, but I do think I need to rewatch Eyes Wide Shut, so keep that in mind for future classics. Whenever we have a sex movie that comes out. Not to reduce this movie to that.
That was the idea back when 50 Shades of
Grey
came out. We didn't. Yeah, we just blew right through it.
The Terminal, Caddyshack.
Caddyshack.
The Terminal.
Caddyshack,
I hate
sorry.
The Terminal.
Wedding Crashers or Iron Giant?
Ooh. Wedding Crashers.
Iron Giant.
I'll have to refresh that one because I haven't seen Iron Giant, but I would have probably guessed Wedding Crashers, but I won't pick it. The Hunger Games or How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Jim Carrey?
Hunger Games.
Hunger Games.
Fine. Misery, Platoon.
Misery.
I agree.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll go Platoon, but I do like Misery.
Misery scared the shit out of me when I was 13.
I'm worried that when we rewatch that in a couple of years, that it won't be as... I don't know, but I'm worried that...
I've never loved Platoon. I've appreciated Platoon.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Bad Boys 2.
Bad Boys 2.
Bad Boys 2.
Why is the How the Grinch Stole Christmas coming up every time?
I don't know. I didn't type anything in. The Birds or The Dark Knight?
The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah. Black Hawk Down, Million Dollar Baby.
Flip a coin. Million Dollar Baby.
Agreed.
I feel like I'm constantly choosing the one I saw last when we went to these coin flip movies. Speaking of another coin flip movie, Eagle Eye or Batman Forever?
Which one's Batman Forever?
Riddler, Jim Carrey as Riddler, Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face.
Yes, Eagle Eye.
I haven't seen Eagle Eye, but I'm sure it's better.
I don't know if I've seen it or not. Call Northside 777.
You might want to blow that one off.
At first, I thought it was North by Northwest. But then, at the bottom, it didn't say that, so clearly it wasn't. RoboCop 87 or Attack of the Clones.
I'll take Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, it's Attack of the Clones, but man.
Fight Club or Blade?
Fight Club. If we're Blade 2, though, it'd be a lot closer.
But what would it be?
Probably Fight Club.
That's kind of what I
thought. It'd be hard, though. It would be a hard decision.
Fight Club for me, but Blade and Blade 2 are really good. Good stuff. The first superhero movies in the wave of superhero films that came from like 98 on. Blade's really strong. The first 15 minutes of Blade is like, it's pretty damn good.
Put Wesley Snipes in the Marvel Universe. Come on. Come on.
Oh, that would be awesome. Then they'd have to, wouldn't they have to in some way, though, say that those first three Blade films then are then part of that universe?
I mean, does it hurt it any?
Yes, Blade Trinity hurts everything. It immediately becomes the worst DCEU film, or the Marvel film.
Then they'd have to take everything out of his paycheck right away. Attack of the Clones or Animal House?
Animal House.
Attack of the Clones.
Animal House. True Grit 2010 or Christmas Story?
True Grit.
True Grit.
Movie I've never seen, but I own. Ooh, this will be fun. Inglourious Bastards or Rocky IV?
Inglourious Bastards.
Inglourious Bastards to me is just as much fun as Rocky. It's just a different kind of fun.
Right.
So I have to go with that one.
I would go with that as well. But I knew it would give you a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
Howard's End. 92 or Citizen Kane?
Citizen Kane.
Howard's End is the same kind of title as that Dust movie from a few weeks ago. That it's like, oh, this is so English.
I just hear Howard's End and I want to take a nap.
Masterpiece theater.
That is how I feel when I hear Citizen Kane, but then I watch it and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, it's like modern style film. But yeah, it does, Citizen Kane.
It does seem like homework when you talk about it. Last one that I don't know if we'll be able to, might have to refresh since I haven't seen one of them, but if you guys don't split, Amadeus or Serenity?
Oh, I love Serenity, but Amadeus is obviously...
Amadeus is the clear choice.
Okay. Then that's our show.